Ethan is back. Julia, Michael is not here. Amber is here. Matt is here. Anthony still rocking the perfect attendance. Adamir as well. Dylan's not here. Jose, Reed, Lucas, Andrew. All right.
Okay, so beginning at 11:46, we're stopping.
So, the good news is that one of the people who owe me the test took the test, but two of them did not. So if they don't have their exams or contact me by Friday, they're gonna get zeros. Because I can't release the grades, your exams, until everyone's done. So hopefully the individuals that have not taken the exams will send me an email and I can schedule an appointment. Or rather, program Blackboard so they can take their exams. Because getting a zero for 20% of your grade, it's going to be a steep hole to climb out of. All right. Dun, dun, dun. Come on, stupid computer, cooperate with me. Do what I want you to do. All right. Two cases you had to do. Yeagle and Grubbs. Let me get my yellow marker and my red marker. Yellow is extra credit, of course. Red, well, that's self-explanatory. Seeing how we're on the Halloween season. Dum, dum, dum. Carlton, did you do your homework? Well, good thing I'm calling on you on the first one, right? Stand up, please. Yeagle v. Collegian Times. Generally speaking, what happened? What's going on here? You can look at whatever you wrote.
He defiled his reputation by saying that
defiled or defamed?
Defamed, yeah.
Defamed, yeah.
Yeah, and they called him the director of butt licking.
Director of butt licking?
Yeah.
Okay. And who did?
The student newspaper.
Student newspaper. Oh, so was it a story?
Yes.
Okay. Did the story describe her butt-licking techniques?
No.
Well, one would think if she was the dean of butt-licking, she would be a master at it, yeah?
Yes.
Good.
So, yeah. They said that and then she went to court and...
What was the story about?
It was about that happening.
It was about her butt licking?
Well, no, it was about her butt licking. It was about the defamation of her name.
No, the story in the newspaper wasn't about her defamation.
Oh.
What was the story in the newspaper about?
It was.
Oh,
So it was about a school program. Now, would a student newspaper, I don't know if they have a newspaper here, but did you have a newspaper when you were in high school? Did the high school have a school newspaper?
No, I don't know.
No, no, okay.
Well, if you're going to have like a school newspaper, do you think it would be normal for the school newspaper to discuss a school program?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's no way, shape, or form that this school program had anything to do with Buttlick. Then why was she called Buttlicker?
It was... beneath the quotation of the newspaper that it was...
Did you really do your homework?
I did.
Okay. All right, thank you. Lex?
Yeah.
You do your homework?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm having a hard time where this butt-licking correlates with the story about a student placement program. What's the connection? What's the nexus? So it had nothing to,
the
school was not offering a program on butt licking. She was in fact not the dean of butt licking. It's just the students who ran the newspaper
didn't like her.
Oh, okay. All right, was she happy about this?
Not at all.
So what did she do?
She sued the newspaper and claimed that it was voluntary and it violated Virginia's insulting words statute.
Insulting word statue. There's nothing stupider than a statute that says insulting words. But that's what legislatures do. They pass stupid laws. But let's focus on the defamation part of it, okay? Defamation. What is defamation? Didn't we cover that? I could have sworn we covered it.
Yeah. The act of damaging the good reputation of someone.
Okay, so potential. Her reputation could be damaged somehow by being called out for being the director of butt licking. But there's nothing in the facts that actually suggests she actually is the director of Butler.
No.
Okay. I only ask that because what's one of the easiest defenses for the claim of defamation? Five letters. Starts with a T, ends with a H.
Truth.
All right, so there's nothing truthful. She's in fact not the director of butt licking, right?
Right.
What's the other possible definition? Defense for defamation. Oh, look at this. We're going over the case and I'm doing review at the same time. We're multitasking in here. What's the other defense to defamation? Bless you. Truth and? What? No. What? Opinion. Opinion. Okay. So, what did the trial court do?
Mr. Chase agreed that phrase was void of any literal meaning which should not be taken reasonably as a statement of fact.
Ooh. You say that last part again, and say it loud. Say it proud.
It could not be taken reasonably as a statement of fact.
All of these torts, anything in civil litigation, it's not based on what you, the plaintiff, or what you, the defendant, think it means. It's based on a reasonable person standard. what an everyday average Joe or Jane who heard this actually think she could have possibly been the director of Bubblegum. The trial court said no reasonable person would think that. Right? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
So it dismissed the case. Are we done?
No.
No, because it was an appeal, right?
Right.
All right. So what was the issue the appeals court dealt with? It literally is the issue that I gave you.
Yeah, whether the trial court erred in holding that as a matter of law, the previous director of Butler refused not to debate in front of our meeting.
All right, very good. Cool. One last question for you. You said whether the trial court erred. What does erred mean?
Made an error.
Made an error. Remember, in order to get an appeal, do you have an absolute right to an appeal?
No.
No. What is going to get you an appeal? What must happen? Some type of mistake, an error, made by,
judge,
or,
jury,
about what?
Decisions being made.
Substantive or procedural law. So what the appeals court here is looking is to see if the trial court, in fact, made a mistake in dismissing the case. Very good, thank you. Cole, are you prepared today?
I am.
All right, stand up. What did the appeals court say? Because this isn't a you be the judge. I don't care what your opinion is. I want to know what the appeals court says. Did the trial court, in fact, make an error?
No.
No. Why not?
I don't know why, but I know that they didn't.
What was it? Now, you said you did your homework.
Yeah, I did.
So what did the trial court say? Did you write it down?
It's in my phone.
Well, dude, what good is your homework going to do if it's in your car?
Well, I've just done it.
Well, I'm confused.
Right before this class, I've done it.
So go get it.
Right now?
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
I'll come back to you for the second case. That's as good as my dog ate my homework, for Christ's sakes. Jeez. Carol, you see the stuff I got to deal with on a daily basis? It is crazy. I know you did your homework. Right? All right, well, this is the easy part. Telling me what the trial court said is the easy part.
Trial court upheld the dismissal of defamation and social language.
Okay, why? Why did the trial court uphold the dismissal? What did the trial court say? What was its reasoning?
That the words, the
director of Butlicking.
Yeah, sure. The court's conclusion was based on the notion that in order to be actionable as a defamation, a remark must be clearly read as conveying
in order to sustain a claim of defamation.
So you have to actually be
Because if she actually didn't do butt licking, what could this be? Well, hold on a second. Now I'm just really confused. So we gotta dial this back a minute for a second. So you're saying that the newspaper would in fact be liable for defamation if she in fact butt licked?
Right.
Well, one of the defenses to defamation is truth. So if they reported that she was butt licking and she actually was butt licking, there would be no defamation. She would be reported, the newspaper would be reporting a fact. So you sure about that? I don't know, Carol. I don't know. I think you might have me confused a little bit.
Are you confused? Okay, that's all right. That's all right. We're learning. We're learning. Anyone else? Can anyone else help Carol? Yeah.
Basically, we concluded that the trial court did not error it because the offending phrase cannot support an action for defamation.
Okay. Why?
It's offensive and distasteful, but it cannot be considered defamation because it doesn't state a fact. There obviously isn't a director of butt-licking role at the university. So.
Oh.
Which any reasonable person would think.
Oh. Well, yeah. So,
you can't contend that she would even think about doing something like that as a job. Is that what you're telling me? That it's just so far beyond reality? Is that what you're saying? Well, I know these day and age, God knows what colleges are offering, but I can't imagine there's any college that actually has a butt-licking program. At least that would have, maybe Harvard, you know, they're kind of weird over there. But, you know, what do I know? But hold on a second. Hold on a second. What the court basically said, and this is the key catchphrase, is that this is no more than rhetorical hyperbole. What does that phrase mean? Rhetorical hyperbole.
It's like exaggerated or like funny or like poor effect type of talk.
It's the same thing as calling food trout a la green plague. What? It's rhetorical hyperbole. Rhetoric. You're just saying something. Hyperbole. Just that's not factually true. It's just kind of whimsical. It's goofy. It's colorful. It's meant to catch your attention.
So in other words, yeah, were they actually claiming? Because that's what defamation is. You're making a claim that someone did something. And it's not factually true. Were they actually making a claim that she was in fact butt-licking? No, they weren't. They were kind of poking the bear. They were just kind of making fun of her. Does that rise to the level of defamation? No. And it doesn't rise to the level of defamation because no reasonable person would think that it's true.
Would that be slander?
Well, it's in print, so is it libel or is it slander? Why is it libel? Because it's written. So if you say something, it's slander. If it's printed, it's liable? Libel. Okay, good. Libel. Actually, it's written like libel, but... Questions? Key is, you got to understand what the court is saying. That's the key.
By the way, you know what happened to Eagle?
Nothing.
She stayed in her job and she ended up retiring.
Damn.
Well, that's the other aspect of defamation. You actually have to suffer some type of harm. She didn't actually suffer a demotion. She didn't get fired. She didn't get terminated. She stayed on her job till she retired. Womp, womp, womp. Yes?
So what happens to the person that wrote that?
You know, I don't know. I could not find that out.
It probably got consequences from the school.
I'm sure... You never know. By that point, the student could have already graduated, too. Well, no, because typically editors of school newspapers are seniors. So I really don't know, but that's an interesting question.
All right, very good. Oh, now we get to move on to the mother of all IIED cases. Did you find it?
Yeah.
All right, very good.
This one was like, it was hard to read. It was freaking out.
This is a brutal one, yeah?
It was very, very, very bad.
All right, Cole, show me that you actually did your homework. We're on Grubbs now.
So, the plaintiff stopped at a Nissan dealership on the way home. Test drove two cars.
Why on earth would somebody stop at a Nissan dealership?
He had the time.
He had the time. Okay, why would anybody go to a car dealership in general? Are they going to go watch a movie?
No.
Are they going for the snacks?
Buy a car.
Buy a car. Was he actually going to buy a car?
No, he was just looking.
He was just looking. Do you have a right to go and look at a car? Why would you want to go look at a car?
It'd be fun.
Okay, yeah, that's always fun. Yeah, you can go take him for a test drive. What might be another reason why you're going to go look at a car?
Buy it.
On the spot, though? Kick the tires, kind of see what it's all about, see if you like it, see how much it costs.
See how comfy it is.
See how comfy it is, right. Right. Don't be like Mrs. Professor LeManic. Oh, I like the way the car looks, I'm going to buy it. She's going to do that to me, you know. We just got her a car last year. And now suddenly she wants a new one. You know why? For the worst of all reasons. It doesn't have a heated steering wheel, and it doesn't have cooled seats. First world problems.
It's a game changer, though.
Oh, first world problems. So, he's going to go and he's going to go look. He was not necessarily intending to buy. All right. What happened?
So,
did he buy a vehicle?
No.
Oh. Why not?
So, he got there and they offered him a Prius truck, so they took his keys and then...
Wait, what does that mean?
For trade-in value.
Trade-in value, huh?
So they took his keys.
Did he go on a test drive?
He did.
He did. What did he drive?
Nissan 300ZX.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right.
Did he like it?
Yeah.
Oh, alright, cool.
And then he was pressured to sign a check, and it was stated that he didn't have to, but the guy mandated that it was needed.
Wait, hold on a sec. Now I'm really confused. Yeah. I thought you just said he gave his keys over to get it appraised.
Yep.
And now he's having to write a check?
Yeah, he's...
He's going to pay for the appraisal?
No, he's getting a check for the new car.
I didn't think he wanted to buy a new car.
No, he doesn't.
Then why didn't he say, yo, what the fuck? I'm leaving. He did.
And then they asked him to write a check for his manager to...
Wait, let's go back to this. He actually said, with his mouth and his words, that he wanted to leave.
He actually wrote it down.
Why didn't he just say, yo, what the fuck, I'm out of here?
He's mute and deaf.
Oh.
Yeah. Game changer.
Oh, game changer. Well said. All right. So it's not like he can just start screaming and making a scene. He can start screaming and making the scene.
Yeah.
How? I thought you just said he was mute.
I mean, he can't speak words, but...
He could make a scene, but he couldn't probably start screaming. Or maybe he could. Some deaf people aren't. Well, no, you said he was mute. If he was mute, he can't make a sound.
At the end, his
mom be like
said
this.
He was screaming. At the end, his mom said he was screaming.
So is he mute or not?
He is. That's what the case said, but it also said that his mom said it.
So confused. All right, so... Well, okay, hold on a second. How long was he there for?
He was supposed to get home at 6:30. He had gotten to the dealership at 3-something. And apparently he didn't get home until 8:30 or 9. So about 6 hours.
Damn. Why?
Because,
what took so long?
The guy kept trying to pressure him to buy the car, and he didn't want to.
But you just said he wrote a check.
Yeah, he was pressured to make a check. It's and pressure, the salesman pressure. Said that it was needed for the manager. But in reality, it wasn't needed at all.
Huh. All right. Question.
Yep.
Why was the salesman doing this?
Because of the sales technique.
Oh, so it wasn't necessarily that the salesman was acting out of line. He was actually acting according to store policy?
No, he did go to some extremes.
Oh, like what?
He said that any time, well, he wrote down that any time he wanted to leave, take the check or his keys back to let him know.
Okay.
The plaintiff said multiple times, well, wrote down. That he wanted it back. And he dismissed it and laughed.
Okay. So, multiple hours. In the end, did he buy a new car?
No, he tore up the check.
So he got his check back.
Yep.
Okay. And did he get his own truck back?
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Ethan, did you do your homework? Jose, did you do your homework?
Yeah.
Do you disagree with anything that Cole said?
No.
All right.
Well, I mean, it's a bit extreme stuff, I guess.
All right, so what happened to him when he finally left the dealership?
He went home and he was, like, upset. Like, he was, you know, making, like, crying noises. And he ripped up the check into little pieces, and you know, you could obviously tell like he was emotionally distressed.
Okay. What happened after this? The next day, the next week, the next month.
Like he couldn't go back to work. Like,
why not? I thought we heard that he got his truck back.
Oh, yeah, but still, it's just a situation. Like, you know, just made him stressed out because he felt like they were playing with him. Because, you know, probably because he's deaf and whatnot.
What? Didn't he just have thick skin?
Nah.
What made this a little different?
He's deaf.
Yeah.
He's deaf.
You know what that would be like?
I have no idea.
Being in a world of sound and not being able to hear a thing? Mm-hmm. Not being able to use your words to communicate? There for hours, feeling trapped, feeling pressure. Mm-hmm. Would that be enough for you not to go to work?
Could be.
All right, what would probably happen to you?
You'll probably be anxious and feel like people are trying to take advantage of you.
Would you trust people who might have hearing anymore?
Nope.
Why not?
Because they probably plotted on you.
Oh, they could be. Yep. You never know. They could literally be saying things behind your head.
Or right in front of you.
Right in front of you.
Yeah.
So all it takes is one of these.
Exactly.
All right. Did he seek help?
Yeah, he went to like 3 or 4 therapists.
What did the therapists do for him?
They pretty much diagnosed him with stress disorder or something like that, anxiety, etc.
What's the treatment typically for those types of diagnoses?
That I don't really remember. I'm sure it's probably some medication or something.
Probably medication. Was he able to maintain any relationships? Friends, loved ones?
No, he broke up with his girl.
Man. Couldn't keep a job. Had to go get counseling. Had to take drugs. Huh. Could we say trauma?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
All right. What happened in the trial?
They found that the Grubbs Nissan was liable for like his anxiety and emotional distress.
Okay.
What are the elements of intentional infliction of emotional distress?
Because
we have to determine whether or not it was present. All right, so we have intent.
Intent. It was reckless or, outrageous. Extreme.
What is that, reckless or outrageous?
What do you...
Well, you said reckless, outrageous, extreme.
Like the actions.
All right, so there has to be an act.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, anything else?
The period of time, I think, that the action was taking place. I don't know if that was something like that. It was like there twice.
Hmm. It has to be causation.
Yep, that.
What does that mean?
The causing?
Yeah, yeah. D, caused, P's, ED.
Yep, yep.
Anything else?
Oh, yeah.
All right, question. This is the basis of the trial court order. Did the dealership engage in... Oh, and by the way, notice the dealership is getting sued, even though it was the salesman that caused it. Why is the dealership getting sued?
I feel like it's a part of their system.
If you are an employee and you engage in tortious action, yes, the employee is an agent of the company, therefore the company has liability. All right. Did the salesman intentionally act? Did he mean to do what he did? Those aggressive sales techniques.
I think so.
All right. Was that an outrageous act?
Yeah, I would say so.
Now, hold on a second. In all circumstances?
No, but specifically this one because the buyer has a disability.
Could you make that argument? That normally this might not rise to the level of extreme and outrageous, but in this circumstance, we have different circumstances.
Yeah, I guess so.
Absolutely. The law is always going to look at the nature of the plaintiff. While we try having a standard legal system that applies to all the same, if this kid is deaf and mute, he is going to be treated the same as all other people who are deaf and mute. He's not going to be treated the same who someone who does not have those disabilities. So, okay. So we know it was intention. We could argue that this was definitely an outrageous act. Was the act by the defendant the cause of plaintiff's harm?
I guess that was arguable. I would say yes, but...
Prior to going and kicking the wheels, could he have a job?
Yeah.
He could hold down a job. Could he have a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Could he go out in public? After going and kicking the tires, could he keep his job?
Nope.
Could he keep his girlfriend?
Nope.
Could he comfortably go out in public?
Nope.
Okay. So we have causation, possibly. And was this severe?
Yes.
What's the evidence of that?
He was stuck in the house, like he didn't want to go anywhere. He lost his job, lost his girlfriend. Everything was going downhill.
And what also is the key?
He got diagnosed by the people.
He's just not saying, my feelings are sad.
Right.
He actually got multiple diagnoses. He got treatment. He tried doing rehab. He was put on medication, receiving counseling. Okay, so should the dealership be held liable?
Yes.
To what extent? Oh, I didn't put the damages in there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, I'm sorry. All right, you're good. I'll let you off the hook on that one. Hold on, let me find it. I thought I had it in there. Bum, 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 bum.
Could any of this, have been considered false imprisonment?
Oh yeah, it could have. But I just wanted to focus on, I cut that out. False imprisonment was one of the claims. I cut that out. I just wanted to focus on the IEOD.
Because they took his kidney.
Go back to the elements. Yeah, go back to the elements of false imprisonment. Did they intentionally bar his ability, freedom of movement?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. They didn't hold him in the office with a gun to his head, but they took his keys and he could not leave. Because would you leave without your vehicle? Probably not. All right. So this was what was ended up being found. He received damages for medical rehabilitation, $70 for past medical, $6,000 for future medical, and $3,205 for past rehabilitation. He also
receive damages for loss of earning capacity. He no longer could work. So apparently he was making about $34,000 a year because the court gave him 4 years of salary. $112,910 plus one future year. He got another $34,650. He also received $50,000 for past physical symptoms and discomfort, and $50,000 for future physical symptoms and discomfort. As far as the emotional injury, he received $101,980 for past emotional injury and mental anguish, and he received another $200,000 for future emotional injury and mental anguish. And he also received money damages for loss of society, meaning he no longer felt safe going out his door. $10,000 for past loss of society, $5,000 for future. So in the end, for tormenting this guy, he ended up getting $573,815 in 1987? No, that's when the incident took place. So this trial probably took place like 1991, 1992? Yeah. So long story short, think about this when you go out and get a job. Always be mindful of the customer. If the customer's like, now I'm good, they should let him go. Questions? Make sure your name's on them, pass them up. Why?
Because I didn't.
I literally just said to summarize it. Oh. Didn't I say that?
Well, I was thinking about it.
I said not to do it like before.
So
I said to brief it.
I know. Can I do the first one and just bring it in London?
No.
Damn. Oh, my
turn. Don't correct
this.
Well,
I did the second one. I did it after. Whatever you need to do.
By the way, while I still get it open on my website, we might have you do the next round cases, because I don't think I do negligence yet. Now, of course, by the way, I do just want to let you know, obviously I was having, I have a little fun too, you know, when I dig down into the details. I do that for a reason. I want you to think about this stuff. All right, now, no homework. Well, yeah.
No.
Yeah, you got the weekend to do. It's only two more cases. We're going to start negligence.
Only two.
It's you're briefing them again. Come on now.
It's only 20.
Number five. It's not. It's like six.
I think just do what you did.
All right. Business law. Gotta pull this up because we gotta finish the torts. Oh, and then we just start negligence. Sweet.
Yeah, exactly.
I went to look at the audio to see if I got a permit. And he didn't even have the audio.
Damn it.
I know, I'm slacking. All right, last couple of things. I'm just going to fly through these real quick. Just got a couple more torts that we ran out of time on. Tortious interference with a prospective advantage. So, I said this before, and I said this last class, and it's the truth. You do not have the right to interfere with business. Someone engaging in business. So the last one that I whipped through at the end was tortious interference with a contract. If someone has a contractual relationship,
You can't try getting one party out of the contract. You can't persuade them. Because you could be sued. So for instance, I'll just give you the easy example. Let's just say, give me an athlete. He's retired, he doesn't count. I'll go for Stephon Diggs. He's on the Patriots. Stephon Diggs. He's currently under contract. Yes, right?
Yeah.
For what team?
Patriots.
Patriots. Where did the Patriots get him from?
Buffalo.
Could. I thought it was from Buffalo.
He went to Houston.
He from Buffalo to Texas to the Patriots.
All right, well, let's say we'll start where he started off. Could Buffalo contact him right now in the season and say, hey, if you break your contract, we'll pick you up while the free agent window is still open?
Yes.
No.
No. No. If a player gets traded who's under contract, that's the owner's decision because the owner wants to deal the contract. But someone from another team cannot convince a player to breach the contract, break the contract, to go out and get another contract. They will be held liable for tortious interference with the contract.
Does that have an effect if they have, like, trade clauses or whatever they want to go?
They can, if they have trade clauses, the clauses are usually phrased that they can request a trade at the end of a season. But that's if that language is in there. They can request. Doesn't mean it has to be granted. But you can't interfere with the player currently in the contract. The team that did it, in my hypothetical, Buffalo could be sued by the Patriots because the contract is in place. Now, if it's a one-year deal, and if you pay attention to sports, any sport, what happens the moment you get to the end of the season? What starts happening? Yeah, he'll go out and he'll negotiate and try getting a new contract. He'll get re-signed somewhere else. But if he's under contract, you can't. You can't interfere. Oh, by the way, privilege? This would be the instance of the owner. The owner is privileged to sell off the player. Question? I have a pen. Can you catch? All right, here we go. Ready? One, two, three. Ooh, it was a bad throw, but you made it look good. Easy. Good job. All right, next up. Tortious interference with a prospective advantage. Tortious interference with a prospective advantage. This is pre-contract. So this is where one party is kind of negotiating with another. But a third party, the tortfeasor, interferes with that attempt to form a relationship. Now, the tort can occur if the party's conduct intentionally causes one of the parties to walk away. If, more than likely, the contract would have been made. So let's go back to Stephon Diggs. Stephon is negotiating with Bill Kraft, and Jerry Jones of the Dallas Cowboys calls up Stephon Diggs and say, don't sign with Kraft, he's an asshole. Good luck. Well, Stephon Diggs was on the verge. He got the money he wanted. He got the terms that he wanted. He was about to sign the deal. But suddenly Jerry Jones calls out of the blue and says, don't do it, man. Well, if Bob Kraft found out about it, he could sue Jerry Jones for tortious interference with a prospective advantage.
Would it have to be because Jerry Jones spoke bad about Robert Kraft?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because he said something that basically soured the relationship.
What if he just called and offered more money?
That's fine.
I feel like people do that all the time.
So how do you,
that's fine.
What about the fifth? How do you prove that in that situation? Because if you obviously soured a relationship, that dude's not going to take your side and help you out.
Someone, when those situations do occur, someone inevitably says something. So it's found out.
But like,
all right. I actually, I have a case in here. Do you hear, have you heard about Carvel? Carvel ice cream cakes.
Oh.
Yeah. Back in the 80s and 90s, Carvel used to sell their ice cream cakes through franchises. So, like, you know how there's McDonald's everywhere, there's Wendy's everywhere, chain. Carvel started setting up shops that somebody could basically become an owner of a franchise. So they would invest and get the rights to sell the cakes out of a store. They also sold ice cream and like, floats and other goodies. Well, around the late 1990s, early 2000s, Carvel decided they were going to sell directly to grocery stores. So imagine you set up a Carvel ice cream shop, you go out and you invest $1 million of your own capital to buy the franchise, and suddenly Stop and Shop and Shaw's and Price Chopper and all the grocery stores in the city suddenly have quantities of the very ice cream cakes that you're selling. Well, here's the thing. The franchisees sued Carvel, claiming what this was a tortious interference with a prospective advantage. Who were they interfering with? The customers. Because by putting the cakes inside the grocery stores, the customers could get the cakes cheaper than they could the franchises. So the franchisees sued Carvel, claiming we're interfering with this prospective advantage, this ability for us to sell the cakes. Unfortunately, for the franchisees, they lost. Right, because the franchisees don't own Carvel. Carvel, as the corporation, gets the right to make the decisions. And if the franchisees don't like the fact that the grocery stores are selling the cakes cheaper, what can they do?
Sell it for cheaper.
They can sell it for cheaper. Right. How's that for an example? Make sense?
Yeah.
All right. What?
You said in that sense it makes sense, not in the sports analogy.
Well, I was trying. All right. Intrusion of privacy. Intrusion of privacy. Sometimes called intrusion on seclusion. Think about famous people and paparazzi. This is where intrusion of privacy happens frequently. In order to intrude on someone's privacy and be held liable for it, you must intentionally invade the private affairs of another. You must intentionally invade the private affairs of another. The easiest way to view this element is with something physical, like a microphone. Oh! What was the name of that, she was a reporter, she did sports, and somebody snuck into her hotel bathroom and put a camera, Andrews? This wasn't that long ago.
Aaron Andrews.
Yeah, okay. Someone sneaks into your hotel room and puts a camera in the bathroom. Is that illegal? Yeah.
So this is what we're talking about. This is the physical intrusion into the privacy of another. Two, second element, the intrusion must offend a reasonable person. It must be offensive on the reasonable person scale. Putting a camera into a woman's bathroom, I think a reasonable person would be like, "Ooh, that's a big no-no." Three, the matter must be private. The matter must be private. So, going and doing your bathroom break type stuff, I think most of us would agree that that's, you do that in private. If you were to go out on the street and have a fight with your significant other in public, would that be a private matter? Why not? What's the difference? Yeah, because you're doing it in public. So the third element, matter must be private or in a private situation. And last, the intrusion must cause harm. So like mental anguish from embarrassment or some type of suffering. Again, the easiest hypothetical situation is to think about is someone filming in the bathroom. That would be an intrusion of privacy.
What if I'm just standing outside your house windows looking inside?
Where?
In public.
No, that's a great question.
Say I'm from the sidewalk.
If you are from the sidewalk, and you are one of those people
I'm just standing
that don't pull your shades down when you drop your drawers, you cannot sue him for invasion of privacy. Why?
Because I'm on a public sidewalk.
Because you're on a sidewalk.
And it's just in view.
The person gets in front of the window, doesn't pull the shade down, and then decides to get naked. That's your choice. That's not private. But if you did pull your shades down, and Andrew, being the pervert I think he is, climbs onto the side of the house, gets up on top of the dumpster, and is peeking in the window like this, that's a different situation.
Would that be considered trespassing? Like
you could also get him for trespassing as well.
But you're not damaging anything on the privacy.
Well, that's true. I said it would be considered trespassing, but what would you sue him for? Maybe you dented the trash can when you climbed up on it. All right.
Loitering is just hanging out around somewhere, right?
Loitering?
It'd be a company thing.
And hanging around. Do you have a right to hang around in the spot you're hanging around?
Okay.
So if you're just going to sit outside, Beavis and Butthead. They're always hanging outside the store going, all that weird stuff. They're just staying on the sidewalk outside of a store, possibly blocking people's ability to get around them to get into the store. And they stay there for 4 hours. That's loitering, particularly if the business says, go away. But if you're in a park, just kind of chilling on a park bench and take a nap, that's not loitering. Because why is the bench in the park? For people to sit on. So loitering is when you are just in a place where you shouldn't be for longer than you should.
Is there a time period?
It's reasonable. What's reasonable?
5 minutes.
Right, because if you're going to a convenience store, how much time does it take you to get out of your car, walk into the store, get your stuff, and then walk out? You know? Now, if you were waiting outside because you were waiting for a ride, well, that's different, because you're there for a reason, and you're not there because you're just hanging around doing nothing. You have a purpose. So if someone said, hey, get off the sidewalk, and you would just simply say, hey, I'm waiting for a ride,
the store owner might be like, okay, just like go down a little bit. Just don't block my customers.
So what if the store owner doesn't want them to wait for rides there? Is that
That's like the right, because usually they have posted. They have you're only there for the purpose of being a customer.
Okay.
So what if you're homeless? The same thing.
What if you're homeless?
Just get off.
If you're homeless, just get off the property.
If you're homeless, stay there so you can go to jail and then you can have housing.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. You get your three meals and getting them off. All right. So does everyone get invasion of privacy? Defenses? Oh, go ahead, film me. There are people that are perverted like that. If you get the consent. Or if it's privileged. So I'll give you a hypothetical. Aaron Andrews, camera, out of the ceiling fan, whatever. Let's say that the person who had the camera was actually an electrician or a plumber, and he was putting the scope through to try to see where there was a leak. And then he accidentally looked down at the camera and said, ooh. Did he have a right to put the camera there? Yeah. But then you could argue, what's the reasonable amount of time to sit there and watch? Well, I'm just saying, if you kind of like stick your... I'll give you an example of one thing that happened to me. I go down, and this was a couple of weeks ago, and I'm starting... So I'm at the age where I still mentally think I'm young, but every now and then weird things happen. I'm like, well, maybe I'm not as young as I think I am. So we're down at Mohegan, and my wife likes playing the slot machines, and she's happy, whatever, and I'm just bored. So I'm like, I'm going to go to the men's room. And like... They put with like arrows, like Indian head arrows, to signify the directions that you go. So I walk up and I just look up and I see the arrow, but I don't read what's above it. And I see the bathroom, and on all the rest of the men's rooms in the whole building, the men's room's on the right, the women's room's on the left. So I see the arrow, I don't really look up, I look at the right door, the left door, I go on the right. Lo and behold, I walk in, I'm like, oh shit, it's the women's room. Oh! You know what I did? Turned around and I went like this. Was it a mistake? Yes. Did I intrude on the privacy of others?
Yes.
I didn't see anything. But what did I not do?
Not look.
I didn't linger.
Oh.
I realized mistake and I'm like, because I'm like, where are the urinals? They're like, this is so weird. Nothing but stalls. Oh, man. So I left it. I was embarrassed. But if I would have sat there and I'd been like, pervert, then I potentially could be sued for invasion of privacy. Weird things happen. All right, the last one that I'm going to give you, and this is happening more and more frequently than when I first threw this together 20 years ago when I first taught this class. Commercial exploitation. Commercial exploitation is a tort where a company uses one's likeness without their permission. So, they take a picture and put it in an ad, and they generate money from the ad, but the person whose picture is never gave their consent. That's commercial expectation, or exploitation. Or maybe you're an artist and you put a little song up on YouTube, and then the next thing you know, you hear it in a commercial. And the company never offered to or asked to use the song. That would be commercial exploitation. I got the weirdest actual example. I had a former student at Nichols College back in like 2010 who came up to me and was like, Professor, I posted a picture on this new platform called Facebook. And it showed up in a newspaper. my picture. Can I sue them?
No. Why not?
Because it's probably going to be
a cold. Oh, yeah. Ever read the terms and conditions of all the apps that you put on the phone, your phone? You actually read the fine print? Facebook actually has in the terms and conditions, and all of them, Instagram, I don't even know all the apps, whatever, all the little social media apps. Anything that you put up is not yours. It enters the public domain. And by the way, it lasts forever. So you cannot turn around and sue, claiming, they're making money off me, I didn't give my permission. You shouldn't have posted it then.
So, how does that work if it's like a music video or something? Like, if anyone can use your music video, like, you don't have to get...
No! Do you follow, YouTubers or bloggers? If they use a movie clip, I think under the law you can use, 7 seconds of a clip. Anything, it might be 10, it's a short amount. But anything more than what is allowed under fair use, you can get stricken. You could get, basically, the owner, if they find out, can contact YouTube, demand you take it down. There are YouTubers that lost payments, monetary payments, for posting certain videos. Some instances, entire websites got shut down. The people who used to review movies and just basically let the whole movie play, there was a couple of them that became famous for a while. Well, the studios found out about it and, shut down those channels. So you got to be careful. If it's yours and you don't want anyone to use it, don't put it on the internet. And if you work on the internet, don't use someone else's stuff without their permission, because that is the tort of commercial exploitation. Yes?
Copyright infringement, yeah.
Even if you don't have a copyright, you can just prove that it's yours. What?
Like, if you don't have a copyright or something, you post it online for, your audience to see, then can somebody just use your stuff?
No. Not without your permission. But, how are you going to find out about it? So, weird thing. And this is the last example, but I'm going to give you the elements of negligence because I know time's getting short. I was in a couple of bands for a bunch of years. We recorded, we put our music up online, we used to sell CDs. I haven't been in a band for like 15 years. But I'm still getting revenue where it's like some of the stuff is on YouTube, some of it's on iTunes, some of the other music servers. But I actually found out that a Japanese company took a clip of one of our songs. I found out about it. I contacted them. They apologized. And they sent us a small royalty check. Now, if I wanted to, I probably couldn't. Well, actually, I couldn't sue them because they were in Japan. But I just was pretty glad that, they were respective of the fact that it was ours. And, they paid it. We every now and then we get a check for like $30. It's like, wow, that's like 6 months of use. But still, it's still pretty cool that we made something that someone liked enough to put in an ad. That's pretty cool.
What would you call yourself?
What?
What would you call yourself?
What was the band name?
Can you play the song?
That was, it's on my website. It's in About the Professor. I put all the links. Standard Deviation. Was the band that the clip got taken from. So it was pretty cool. Alright. Negligence. Torts require an intentional act. Negligence is an unintentional act. To be found liable for negligence, the standard that is used is the reasonable person standard. So it's not whether you think you did something wrong. It's would a reasonable person in that situation believe you did something wrong.
And what is the wrongful act? Acting unreasonably. You're in a situation where you should act a certain way, and you don't.
That is negligence.
Now, by the way, it's not moral fault. It's not, we're not talking like ethics or morality. It's rather doing something within a zone of foreseeable danger. Intent is not required. In other words, you didn't mean to do what caused the harm. So I'll give you an example. Back in the day, in my youth, I still do, actually, listen to heavy metal music. I like it so heavy and loud, it makes some people's ears bleed. It's what gives me joy. When I was younger, I used to go to concerts. And I would go in the mosh pits. And I used to like beating people up and getting beat up. Because that's what you do. I enjoy it. If you go to a heavy metal concert, and you go into a mosh pit, and you come in physical contact with people, is there not a reasonable expectation of the people that are also in the mosh pit that there's going to be physical contact? Okay. What happens if I engage in that same behavior when I went to church on Sunday? Would I be engaging in a reasonable level of behavior if I started moshing with all of the sweet little old ladies that just love me in church? Probably not. So, if I was to mosh in church, did I mean to hurt the little old ladies? No, probably not. But should I have acted that way? And was the harm foreseeable? Yeah, if I start swinging my arms around 90-year-old women, I'm gonna knock one of them out. So there's a lot of components to negligence. But here is the challenge. There is no absolute set of rules. Because again, it's based on the reasonable person standard. So obviously, your standard and my standards of what reasonable behavior may be different. But it's not subjective. The best way to make it objective is you basically do a survey. You ask 100 people. And if most of them would say, you probably shouldn't be acting this way, then you could be held liable for negligence. Questions? Now, consideration is paid to the person's characteristics. So they do look at the defendant. They look at their physical attributes. So again, me versus Miss Bertha, who's honestly a real woman. She's 94 years old. She's about 4'8". She is maybe 80 pounds soaking wet. I am much bigger. 3 times heavier. Sad to say, but it is what it is. If I was to mosh her, would I be acting reasonably? Probably not. Why? Because I'm 3 times her size. But if I was to go with... He's hiding in the back.
What?
If I was to mosh against you, could I be engaged in a negligent... He might actually probably kick my ass. But it would be different. Different. They also look at mental capacity. An adult versus a child. Someone who has a high IQ versus somebody who has a low IQ. Age. Is there a duty owed? What's the situation? Time and place. There's a whole bunch of circumstances involved in negligence. But at the end of the day, is the result of the unreasonable behavior, is the harm foreseeable? If someone acts in a certain manner, could they get somebody hurt? That's ultimately the standard you use. So here are the elements. Do I have them come up? I do. I'm going to give you the elements because you've got to do cases on negligence. Element number one. There has to be a duty owed. Or, notice this. Standard of care recognized by law. Obviously, you can't be a bystander. But if you're in a place and you're expected to act a certain way, that's the standard you're going to be held to. And there's a breach. A duty and then a breach. Or failure to act the way you should have in that circumstance. I'm clicking. I'm going to leave them off because I know there's a lot of words I'm just trying to get to because I know we're on time. Did the act, the breach, is that linked to the harm? In other words, was the breach the proximate cause of the harm? And is the harm foreseeable? So if I rode my motorcycle through the lobby downstairs, is it foreseeable that the projector on the third floor would suddenly fall off the ceiling and fall down and hit you on the head? No, because you're driving a dirt bike downstairs. Why would that suddenly fall off? It's not foreseeable. So if you got your head crushed by the projector, you couldn't sue me just because I was driving a dirt bike through. But what would be foreseeable harm? I ran somebody over. And last but not least, the plaintiff must be absolutely injured. You have to have proof of harm. So, here's the shortcut. Duty, breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. Seven words. That's how you remember the elements of negligence. Duty, breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, harm. You have two cases that deal with negligence. You're going to brief them. So this means, again, you summarize the facts, you include the issue, you try to find the rule, and then you, in your best efforts, explain what the court's reasoning was. Have a wonderful weekend, and look out for those mosh pits. They'll get you every time.